Welcome back to the program. Sitting in for Chad Hartman, I'm Dave Schrader. Joining us now on the line, we have got James L. Swanson, the Edgar Award-winning author of the New York Times bestseller Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer, and an executive producer of the 2024 Apple TV Plus Manhunt series. As a historic Deerfield fellow in early American history, he lived in pre-Revolutionary War House near the massacre site in Deerfield, Massachusetts. His new book, The Deerfield Massacre, is what we're going to talk about now. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here with us today, James.
Thanks, Dave. Happy to be on.
First of all, fascinating series, Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer. I am still so interested in that type of history, and it's amazing to me how many people are. I mean, Kennedy, Lincoln, anytime you've got a story that talks about the history and the mystery surrounding their cases, it seems to really enrapture people and draw them back in.
Oh, you're right. These are the things I like to write about. Not so much murder and death, although that is what I write about. What I'm interested in is key moments of change in American history where everything changes overnight, whether it's the Lincoln assassination, the Kennedy assassination, the Martin Luther King assassination, which I've already written about. These are moments of overnight change in America. Great dramatic, great sorrow, and they're just key moments in American history. So I'm drawn to these stories.
Let me ask you, James. I did some TV talking about a lot of the different parts of history that a lot of people just don't know about. How is it that there is such a rich tapestry of history and historical stories that we just don't engage, we don't acknowledge, and we allow to kind of sit by the wayside while we just tell a lot of the same stories over and over again, or elect to tell them in new ways while vanquishing unpleasant moments regarding those aspects of the history?
Well, here's why the Deerfield Massacre has been overlooked. It was in 1704, a vast early America, long before the American Revolution. The Revolution didn't happen for 75 years. George Washington, Ben Franklin, John Adams hadn't even been born. So this is a lost, frightening early America. People believed in witchcraft. There were constant Indian raids and attacks for years. And so the Revolution has overshadowed that early, frightening, and dangerous New England, which is a story I like to tell so much.
And looking into stories like this, how hard is it to get the history right? I mean, especially when you're going back that far into an aspect of our history where people aren't talking about it, aren't sharing it.
Well, one of the key narratives is by one of the great overlooked heroes in American history, the Reverend John Williams, the pastor of Deerfield, Massachusetts, for almost 50 years. And after the town was sacked on leap year 1704, 50 people were killed when they came out of their houses. 112 people were taken captive and forced march to Canada along with Reverend Williams. 20 people were slain along the way by tomahawk and war club strikes. When Reverend Williams was freed, he wrote a book called The Redeemed Captive, which is a firsthand action thriller account of what happened during that raid.
It's amazing that there were people there that witnessed it, that wrote it down, that kept that history documented, and that those documents and those aspects of our story have not been forgotten at time. When you get a chance to kind of review and look through these things and see what I'm going to guess is tear-stained, blood-stained pages of a very dark part of our story. What's that like for you as an author and a historian?
Well, it feels so real to me because I spent a lot of time in Deerfield. And in my opinion, it's the greatest story of battle and blood, endurance and survival, and faith and family for all of early America. And it seems very real to me because of the time I spent in Deerfield. Whenever I go there, I go to the old burying ground and I visit the graves of Reverend Williams and his poor wife, Eunice, who was slain by tomahawk the first day after the raid. She fell in a river, got soaked wet in the freezing water, couldn't continue. She had given birth 6 weeks earlier, and she was slain by tomahawk, as were many people along the way. Williams' two children were slain on his front doorstep. People were killed during the march. One terrible story is a woman named Mary Brooks, who had fallen on the ice, and she came to Reverend Williams and said, I fell on the ice. I fell hard. I think I've miscarried my baby. Pray with me because I know they're going to kill me today. And they did.
Wow. Wow. It's to go back and look at these moments, and I always find it fascinating. I love history. I love kind of reading where we came from, how we got to the point we are. But there are some elements where it just doesn't feel like we're that far removed from the brutality that we show to one another. And that really kind of breaks my heart.
Well, you're right. Look what happened. A town of 300 people is sacked, burned, and destroyed. 50 people killed the night of the raid. 112 taken captive on a forced march. Some of them spent 1,000 days in captivity in Canada, because this was part of a conflict that went on for generations between England and France. The issue is, who will control the continent of North America? The French were in what is now Canada, then called New France, and the English were New England, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, Maine, etc. And so this was an ongoing struggle that really didn't end until the French and Indian War of the 1760s, when finally England wrested control over North America.
Do you think that there's an element of this history that we let go of? Because is it just because it's so unpleasant to revisit, or is it because there is so much trauma going on ever since then that it just piles on and gets lost under the weight of where we are in our current moments?
Well, that's partly true. Look what happened in Israel with the Hamas attack and the taking of hostages. It is so anguishing to have people taken hostage, killed. And that's what happened in Deerfield. It's very contemporary in that sense. It feels today like it felt then. And also this, we're interested in the glories of the American Revolution, the positive outcome. This, I can't stress enough, is a frightening, terrifying New England of the early 1700s. It's an America that we don't know and we don't recognize. And yet, it set a template for patriotism, religious freedom, and issues of faith and family. So it's really one of the great unknown American stories.
What seems so interesting to me about that part in our history as well, as you said, I mean, there was people being pointed out for witchcraft. There was all this weird underpinnings of the way we worked around each other and found ways to disavow each other, to kind of take out each other's legs, in always in this attempt to land grab, in this attempt to just get more control of certain things. And it's so, I'm trying to find the right word, but it's so overwhelming to me that we are so easily swayed by claims, by finger pointing, and by the ability and want to be a part of some kind of derision, that it doesn't take much to get people into war, or get people, neighbor and neighbor, brother and sister, family members, to square off against each other over their belief systems, or what they believe their belief systems are, because they've been told that those are what's going on.
Well, think of what happened in Deerfield just a few years before the Deerfield Massacre. People in the same town in Salem, Massachusetts, executed 20 people for witchcraft. The testimony against these people was that villagers said they saw these people flying through the air. They saw them practicing witchcraft. They saw them conjuring spells and mysterious things. People believe that. We're of a modern age. We can't believe that the people would be hanged or pressed to death with rocks because they're alleged to be witches. The strange thing is, no one at that time said, there's no such thing as witchcraft. This is nonsense. Everyone believed this. It's phenomenal to believe that people could be executed in Massachusetts because they believed that others were practicing witchcraft, which was nonsense. But no one denied that witchcraft existed, or that the supernatural had great power in Massachusetts.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Right. And you've got this and wrapped in the theology of the Bible, right, which is the leading kind of faction of belief systems at that time, that in religion there's witchcraft and they talk of these things. So that must be real. And anytime somebody crosses you in a negative or bad way, it's easy to give them a label that already fits into an idiom and a belief system that we are ascribed to.
Yes. And that's one reason why Reverend Williams was considered a great hero among his people, because not only had two of his children been murdered the night of the raid, his wife was slaughtered the next day, and many of his parishioners and friends were killed along that march to Canada, from Deerfield up to Canada. And yet, not only did he have to deal with his own personal tragedy, he kept the faith. He inspired his flock to remain true and not give up. In Canada, French Jesuits tried to force the people to give up their Puritan faith. Williams wouldn't do it. He was offered money, bribes, rewards, and threatened with death. And he said, "What would it do for man to give up everything he believes and lose his soul? I won't do it." And so Williams was really a great religious hero and exponent of religious freedom in early America.
And it really says something that they lose all of this, their witness, not just a story told of a person who knows a cousin of a neighbor of a guy, but they walked that march. They made that trek. And when it was over, they went back to reestablish and build again.
Yes, that's the remarkable thing. Williams was offered lucrative positions in Boston, being a minister at churches, well-paid and safe. The Indians were not raiding eastern Massachusetts. Instead, he turned all that down, and he chose to go back with his followers and parishioners and rebuild Deerfield when it was still under Indian attack and threat of Indian attack for the next 25 years. He risked all that because he wanted to remain true to his people and restore his town. It's a remarkable story of heroism.
When you're researching and putting together this book and hearing these stories, seeing the way that they play out, what is kind of your main takeaway from where we are and where we were?
Well, I have two. One, superficially, it doesn't seem we're as hardy and as serious and faithful as people of that time. These people had to carve out their life in the wilderness and endure unimaginable deprivations and tragedies. And we forget what these early Americans did to survive and create this country. And I think it's an inspiring story to read about it and think about it and think of what our forebears and ancestors had to do to survive and to build America. I think it's an inspiring story. It should inspire all of us. It's a terrifying story also of battle and blood and danger. But it's really relates so much to the founding principles of America.
Now, talk to me about that. These people, of course, long before a lot of the major Americans we know, as you said, some weren't even born at that point. My understanding, and maybe you can kind of explain to us where this line is drawn, is that the early quote-unquote Americans were really just British sympathizers. They were sent here kind of under the auspice of creating a new land, new civilization for the throne, for whatever country they came over for. When does it go from being loyalists to Americans starting to cleave this thing out and just creating a place for themselves?
Well, that's one of the great issues of history because, of course, England sent the colonists over to be loyal to the crown. And it was even before the American Revolution that the American identity was forged. For these reasons, one, there wasn't a strong British army here to protect them in the early 1700s. They had to defend themselves. They had to till their fields. They had to build their homes, raise their children. And so they started assuming a new identity shortly after they got to America. And so the American identity was formed even long before the Revolution, and it created a sense of independence, of free will. And we're on our own. Where's England? Where's the empire? What are they doing to protect us? We have to save ourselves. We have to carve out a life for ourselves. And so that's one way in towns like Deerfield. The American identity was formed long before the American Revolution.
Are you, when you are uncovering this and going in and looking at it, what was the biggest surprise to you from this research?
Probably the biggest surprise to me. One, the Native American and Indian history is much more complex than we think it is.
Right.
A number of tribes were involved in the raid. The Mohawks, the Mohicans, the Iroquois of the mountain, the Abnakis. And so it wasn't this faceless mass. These were individual tribes with individual people and their own agendas and their reasons for aligning themselves with the French and participating in the raid. So the complexity and sophistication of Indian history was fascinating to me. But the thing that struck me in the end was the great bravery and valor of these people. You'll see in the book how many Indian raids there were from the time of King Philip's War in 1675, when the Indians came close to pushing the white man off the continent. There were 20 years of raids and attacks before the Deerfield Massacre. I don't know how people had the steadfastness and the bravery and the stubbornness to stay in these colonies, especially Deerfield, which was a very remote, isolated colony.
Right.
What struck me the most was their persistence and their bravery. They really believed they were on what was called the errand into the wilderness. And they stuck true to those beliefs, to the whole Deerfield episode. That's the most remarkable thing, the bravery and willingness to endure these risks and live among in this danger.
James L. Swanson on the line with us here as we discuss this on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. And the book is called The Deerfield Massacre, a surprise attack, a forced march, and the fight for survival in early America. The book is out and available right now wherever you purchase books. And do me a favor, folks, not only grab the book to read it, but make sure to rate and review these books as well, because the more ratings and reviews these authors get, the more that booksellers make that book available to a wider audience. And this is a compelling look at a part of history that you were not taught in school, and it should be revisited. And it's not in a salacious or commercialized way. It is a down and dirty, interesting story telling the way history was and about the people that lived it. James, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks so much, Dave. Pleasure to be on.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. And again, you can find the book wherever you purchase books. We will take a quick break. We'll come back in for Chad Hartman. I'm Dave Schrader. This is News Talk 830 WCCO.